ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Full-time work weighing you down and burning you out? How about job sharing that full-time role with another person? Do you think it's possible? Or is your reaction, tell her she's dreaming? Hello, Lisa Leong here for This Week in Life, helping to make your work life better. In the ultimate job share, two women in Victoria are taking a case to the federal court right now in a bid to run for one Senate seat. Plus, there's increasing pressure for workers to return to the office, and that may not align with out-of-work responsibilities. So is job sharing about to get a big boost? I'd love to hear from you. If you've ever shared a job or worked in an organisation where this has happened, what's that been like? What are your lessons to share? Email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. We're going to hear from current job sharers now. They're lawyers who share a role within a large Australian retailer, Kath Slack and Angela Daly. And full disclosure, I went to uni with Angela and her hubby, so we're mates. Hello to you both.
Hello, Lisa.
So Angela, you and Kath have been job sharing for 20 years now. How did it come about?
We, at the time, were each working side by side in a team in a part-time role because of having young children, and a promotion opportunity appeared. And so we thought outside the square a bit and came up with the idea of a job share proposal.
In that initial conversation, what did you need to know about each other before you decided to put this proposal forward?
I think back then it was a matter of what we didn't know. We didn't know, but we did know that we worked well together, and we did know that we really trusted each other. And I think trust is an incredibly fundamental aspect of a successful job relationship, to know that that person always has your back. And we had that. Everything sort of developed in its own way over the years. We work in a lot different way now than we did back then.
It's been constantly evolving, and I think going back to where we were, we having working side by side, we knew each other's working style.
Same or different, just out of interest?
Oh, it's interesting, isn't it?
Quite different. We are very, you know, we have the same basic legal training, so we've got that core knowledge, but we're very, very different people with very different personalities, but they tend to complement each other. Those differences are really complementary, and I think it allows us to bring different perspectives to a role. We really challenge each other, and we continue to learn from each other. And
it's hard. I think our values are aligned.
Okay, so we need to know, how does the job share work logistically? So who wants to have a crack at that, Kath?
Okay, so I work Monday to Wednesday. Ange works Wednesday to Friday. We have a crossover day on Wednesday, so we're a 1.2 headcount. We are both across everything all the time. That's generally what we've found our stakeholders want. So it's really incumbent on us to make sure the other one's fully briefed. So we have a handover check-in session every Wednesday morning on our crossover day, but also then on Sunday night or Monday morning, we do the same thing. I think if you want to work flexibly, you have to be flexible, and you need to be adaptable to what your day looks like, and that might be just, you know, doing that extra bit on a Sunday night or a Monday morning.
Mm. Part of that is taking each other's call on our off day is an absolute priority. If Kath sends me a text saying, can I run something by you, doesn't matter where I am, that's a priority call. You know, we help educate the people that we work with. That's part of a learning process for them and for us about, hey, email us both. Invite us both to meetings across the week so we know what's going on, even if I'm not there attending. You don't have to get us on our crossover day. It's like, you know, Kath and I, we're known as Kath and Ange, like fish and chips. So, all the girls. So, it's part of that.
You didn't go
team.
To Cange or?
Oh, Cangelina. Was
Cangelina.
Definitely had its go.
Back in the day when they were together.
Has it caused any problems with the people you work with?
There's definitely a cohort who are immediately resistant to any sort of flexible working, and It's very hard to sell the message to them. Then there's sort of
What's the big problem there? Is it that will you actually be available? Are you going to drop the ball?
We had one interview where the recruiter afterwards said to us, well, the only feedback was that she said she couldn't deal with two of you. And I think that's perhaps one of the issues that there is two of us and we are two different personalities, even though we have joint performance reviews and we have a joint CV. So we really do come across as a one entity in terms of managing us. I think there's a natural resistance in some people to flexible working. And so I think it's a matter of people seeing it work, and the more people who see it work, the more less resistance they become to it.
Interestingly, I think for your pairing is that you've actually had several different roles and several different organisations, which I think is quite unique. So how do you go about being recruited as a team?
We have a joint CV now, which comes with an explainer, actually, which explains the job share structure. Of course, the platforms these days, you know, the job platforms like Seek, et cetera, really are only set up, a lot of platforms, same with HR systems, are set up for, you know, the one-person paradigm as a working model. So Kath, who's the way better administrator in our team, is the one who would submit on behalf of us both. And, you know, we just take it from there. Normally people are really intrigued. So it's at least that first conversation. And then after that conversation, then we go.
So you're going in and applying for full-time roles.
Correct. Yes. Yep, correct.
But just saying, hey, look, we're applying for a full-time role, but we just do it differently. This is how we do it.
Exactly what we do.
What would you argue is the benefit of paying 1.2?
Two heads are better than one. Mm. We bring different perspectives. We do bring different strengths. We challenge each other to get the very best outcome. I think it's an absolute no-brainer. We bring more to the role than a single person possibly could. An old manager of ours used to call us shampoo and conditioner, that I would be the shampoo, come in.
At the start of the week, yes.
Get it all at the start of the week. Get it all going, make it all.
Get it down.
Get it down, get it down, get it down, yep. And Ange would come in and make it smooth at the end of the week. So I think, you know, having those different sort of personalities and able to put them in the same role is a huge advantage for an organisation.
So. Sounds like it requires as much work and love as a marriage.
Ange is my best friend, yeah. And I trust her absolutely implicitly. Mm. We don't just job share, we life share, and we very much stress share. And that is such a huge advantage when you're in a professional role, to have someone who you know always has your back and that you can really rely on.
Thank you so much, Ange. And thank you, Kath.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Pleasure.
That was Kath Slack and Angela Daly, job sharers. You're with Lisa Leong for This Working Life on ABC Radio National. And if you've ever shared a job or worked in an organisation where this happens, what's it been like? What are your lessons to share? You can email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Now let's meet an expert on flexible work and job sharing. Roz Dixon is a Professor of Law at the University of New South Wales Faculty of Law. Hello, Roz.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
Roz, so we've just heard from Ange, about the benefits of job sharing. Do you have anything to add?
Well, I thought it was a great account of the benefits in terms of the two brains and the complementary working styles and keeping talented lawyers like themselves, you know, in the workforce and able to apply for more senior roles. So it's clearly, you know, a compelling case. The other benefit, though, I would just highlight for employers and clients is the coverage. You know, everyone has to take sick leave from time to time, go on holiday, have those days. And one of the other things that often happens with job share partners is they step up and cover each other when there are periods of leave or sickness. And that you don't just get two complementary minds and skill sets, you often get much broader coverage of the role. And it can also be a basis for training people up. You know, one of the stories obviously is a story of people staying in the partnership for 20 years, but the other is people come and go into different forms of job sharing. So I work with a senior junior job share at a principal level in Randwick Public a couple of years ago. One of them went on to become a principal and always said, you know, she felt that she'd been trained on the job to be a principal through that partnership. So different kinds of partnerships can also offer training and mentoring, and undoubtedly expanded coverage and therefore value for clients and employers.
Roz, what are the downsides?
You've just got to communicate and you've got to make sure it's the right pairing. So picking up on what Kanj said, you know, they chose each other. They knew that they had a strong foundation of shared values, shared skills, and that they liked working with each other. So job share partners have to have a role in recruiting each other. They can't be randomly assigned to a team. They have to have trust and a really clear sense that they can work together.
And what might the downsides be for an employer or a manager working with job sharers?
Well, I mean, if it goes bad, then of course it's a problem to be managed. And for some, they just have to get their head around how to make sure that they are managing effectively and that they aren't just talking to one or finding it difficult to manage this non-traditional structure. For some employers, the cost, the overlap is also a challenge. Big employers usually not, but smaller or more budget-constrained employers, it can be more challenging.
How common is job sharing in Australia, Roz?
Well, Maribel, who's our other guest, is even more expert than me on this, but it's pretty low in the private sector. It's in, you know, the single digits of percents going up depending on the sector. But in the public sector, it's much more common. And you've seen the benefits of that. They've gone to really senior levels. They've retained talent. They've made arrangements which has made it really possible for people of all backgrounds with huge talent to serve in the public sector. And, you know, full credit to New South Wales and other states that have done that work, along with my, you know, co-panelist and co-guest, people like Maribel, who've made it happen.
Rosalind Dixon is with you, Professor of Law at UNSW. You're with Lisa Leong for This Working Life on ABC Radio National. And we're talking about job sharing. If you've experienced it, maybe as a job sharer or even working with people who are job sharers, would love to hear from you. Email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. So Maribel Marlowe, well, she's a job sharing coach and consultant who helps facilitate that process and joins you now. Maribel, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So let's start with the different models of job sharing. Can you talk us through those?
Yes, of course. So the most common that we see are the twin and the island model that we call them. So the island model is when you have pretty much two part-time, they split the job in two and they both have their KPIs, they both have their reportings. So they're very much two part-timers. The twin model, which we actually see as probably the most common, is the one where the two partners are fully sharing the role, a bit like the example that you had at the beginning. So basically, you don't know who's doing what. They're really sharing it, and they both have together their KPIs are done together, the performance are done together. So this is like probably the two comments that we see. There's also another one that we see coming more and more, and thanks to Roz, also wrote a paper about that. We called it the vertical job share. And that's quite an interesting one because we would actually combine someone who's more senior with someone more junior. So think about transition to retirement, for an example. So that's actually a really good opportunity there for learning and to get to that senior level in the future. That's what we call the vertical job share.
That feels,
these are probably the three.
Really? Yeah. Innovative, Maribel. And Roz did mention the Randwick Public School principles. That, I think, is an example of vertical job share.
Totally right, Lisa. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, Maribel, how common is it for men to job share then, in your experience?
That is uncommon. And I would love to see it more often, obviously. Yeah, so basically what we've seen a lot at this stage are caring responsibilities, right? So we know the load is with women. So the request for job sharing is often coming from women. But I've seen some examples, and I've seen some examples as well as really high level. And especially when we think about this vertical job share example is a good one for that transition to retirement is where you could see men. But they are rare.
And what about job sharing at a high level?
Yeah, so there's actually quite a few out there. I've been fortunate enough to work with quite a few senior levels where they have a team reporting to them. I have co-CEOs that I've been coaching as well. And these roles are so obviously important that it needs to be managed very well, needs to be communicated well. So we take the time to do that planning. But they become actually powerhouse when these teams strategically work together. It's not just the coverage, it's the fact that they can challenge each other and really increase the productivity of the role.
So we heard not only from the example up the front, but hearing from you and Roz, I'm reflecting that it's really the match of the people that can be instrumental in the success or not of a job share. So how do matches actually happen, Maribel?
They can happen different ways. There's probably two key scenarios. So the first one is someone is already in a role and they decided that they would like to job share their role and become part-time. So that way you actually have a part-time role that will be advertised. So that's probably the easiest way as well for an employer to then go through the normal recruitment process and hire another person to job share with that, with this person, which needs to be involved along. The other scenario, which probably see probably most of the time, is two people decided to create a partnership and then they will together apply for a full-time role. So yeah, these are probably the two scenarios.
And can you give us any instances of job sharing going wrong that you can share with us?
I haven't seen that many, I'll be honest, but when it happens, if it happens, it's because it's been matched without really the people being involved at the start. For example, you want to job share your role and then the employer was like, yeah, here's a partner I found for you. Perfect match. They are very similar to you, but actually they do need to be involved. They need to be having that coffee chat, making sure that they share their values. You know, we talked about that in your example. That's highly important in the job share arrangement. And they need to have a combining skills, not necessarily exactly the same, because you don't want them to exactly want to do the same things. You want them to combine each other. Mm. So where I start wrong is when the match was done without really their involvement.
Okay, Roz, spill the beans.
So I've done a few roles, all full-time but collaborative leadership roles. And, you know, usually if a team disagrees, they have a manager that they can go to break the tie, and that's really critical. But if you're at the absolute most senior point in an organisation and you're sharing and you disagree, you actually do need a tiebreaker. And that is one of the reasons that I got really interested in the vertical idea, not just intergenerationally, but making sure that there was a senior partner who had responsibility for managing the relationship and who had the casting vote if you disagree. So I've had lots of very successful involvement in job sharing for myself in leadership, but the one that didn't go so well was we didn't choose each other and we disagreed about everything and there was no tiebreaker. And so that really motivated me to make sure that at the most senior levels, there's always a tiebreaker whereby one person has the 51% casting vote in the face of disagreement, because we all know clear processes make for better collaboration. Even if, you know, you disagree, doesn't mean there's any animosity, it's just disagreement. But you need a way to move forward. And normally that's us, the boss. But if you are the boss, you need a tiebreaker.
You're with Lisa Leong for This Working Life on ABC Radio National. With you, Rosalind Dixon, Professor of Law at UNSW, and Maribel Marlowe, Job Share Consultant. We're talking about job sharing. Maybe you are in a job share, or maybe you've worked in an organisation with job sharers. What are your lessons to share? You can email us, thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Maribel, how can we make job sharing more accessible during the recruitment process?
That's probably one thing. All the jobs should have the possibility of being in the job share. We believe that all roles can be shared. It's just more that not everyone can job share. But the reality is, I think every role that we recruit for should have this. And I've been talking to recruiters as well to make sure that it's part of the discussion with line managers when they start hiring, as is this role, what do you think about job sharing, to really start having the awareness with the recruitment, the line manager are hiring, or what that could look like. So, yeah.
Maribel, but not everyone can afford to work part-time. Are there any financial benefits to job sharing?
I do think, depending obviously of your salary band, where you're at, but sometimes when you actually go part-time, you go to a different tax bracket. So there's also that possibility if you look at going from 5 days to 3 days is one thing you can look into.
Lisa, can I say, often it allows you to have a more senior role, because the more senior you are, the more the demands are, and it's a 24/7, 7 day a week job. But if you're job sharing, you can manage it with your other commitments. Whereas if you're doing it alone, you've got to step back and take a lower level of responsibility.
And Roz, you've also co-authored a proposal to help incentivize job sharing. Can you tell us about that?
We're really excited to share this idea. It's just being released now as an initiative of our new Gender Equality Hub at UNSW. And it's a proposal basically to give concessions to employers on that overlap day. So overlap days aren't wasted. People still do lots of productive work. But there is some time that's just about handover and communication, and we want to make sure that small businesses and cost-conscious employers aren't deterred from job-sharing arrangements by that, by giving them a tax concession on their payroll bill for that overlap. It's actively under discussion with the New South Wales government at present. And so if people have ideas about it, they can definitely let their local member know. But it's something we're really actively pursuing to try and raise the profile of job sharing and also give that additional financial incentive for employers to experiment, to be flexible, and they'll reap the full rewards, as all of our case studies show, of the productivity gains that then flow on from it.
Roz, how likely do you think this is to be implemented?
Well, I'm an optimist. I reckon we'll get it done. But, you know, it's anyone's guess, but we're working hard and we're optimistic.
What is it about this particular time in the world of work then, Roz, that makes job sharing so relevant?
Well, I think, the beginning of the story really highlighted it. The opposition leader, Peter Dutton, has recently announced a back to the office plan for the federal public service. There's a lot of pressure in a lot of organisations for that. And, you know, we can debate the pros and cons of that. But if that's going to happen, it's going to put a lot of pressure on people with other responsibilities and make it harder for them to maintain high-level full-time work. And one solution to that could be more investment in job sharing to keep people able to balance their many commitments. And I think my personal view is flexible work means flexible. We've got to have everything on the table and work with the individual to accommodate what they need to be as effective and productive as possible. But amongst the toolkit, definitely job share helps. And it will definitely help if Dutton's plan becomes reality and he's the Prime Minister forcing everyone back into the office.
Maribel, in 30 seconds, why should organisations think about a job share?
Job share definitely is helping on three fronts: diversity, flexibility, and productivity. So it's a lot of benefits for the businesses as much as for the employees as well.
Big thanks to our guests, Professor Roz Dixon from UNSW Law, job sharing consultant and coach Maribel Marlowe, and our job sharers, Angela and Kath. Next up, try this, it's report back time. On Try This, we give you the hacks and suggestions around something you can use to make your work life better, and we ask you to report back as well. Last time I told you about a hack for prioritising your tasks. It's based on the Eisenhower matrix. It's called the four quadrants, where you divide up your tasks into four categories. Mary sent us this voice memo.
So in the morning, I'll set my three key priorities for the day, two to three that are the absolute must-dos. And then I will use the Eisenhower matrix when I open my email to work out what I can do in 2 minutes, what's urgent, and then the other buckets get filled appropriately. It enables me to have control over my email versus my email having control over me.
Thanks so much, Mary. And Susan writes, I know it so well that I automatically ask myself when something new comes up, is it urgent, important, both or none? We're really good at focusing on important, sometimes on a high level urgent, and usually let anything else go. It's always interesting to look back after a couple of months and see if we made the right call. We have about a 90% success rate. And for details on how to do the retrospective or the four quadrants, you can check out our previous episodes on the ABC Listen app. Thanks so much for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Elise Simons. We're on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Nam, Melbourne. And meet me here again next Friday, live from 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Savings Time. If you haven't already, search for This Working Life on the ABC Listen app and please tap the heart to follow all of our stories. And we're going to put up another curly question on LinkedIn next week for you to ponder as well. Until then, love your work.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.